The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, so it's you and me. Just the breaking story overnight, four women accused, New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, of physical abuse. Article, a piece in the New Yorker, lays it all out. Two women have come forward with their names, another two women not with their names. But the allegations against him, was just reading Carol Markowitz op-ed piece in Fox News, writes, for New Yorkers, it was a strange flashback to the tenure of Elliot Spitzer, who held the New York Attorney General position for two terms. Before becoming governor, Spitzer stayed in office until he got caught patronizing prostitutes and was forced to resign 10 years ago last month. Like Spitzer, Schneiderman was a great liberal hope. He was going places and he would be defeating Republicans along the way. In his piece for Politico magazine, "Will This Man Take Down Donald Trump?" David Friedlander wrote that Schneiderman was emerging as one of the leaders of the resistance, and a column in the New York Daily News considered that New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman could be President Trump's greatest fear in the Russia probe. Like Spitzer, Schneiderman had all the right enemies, and like Spitzer, he felt he was above the law. In his initial statement after the New Yorker story broke, Schneiderman said, in the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I would not cross. For a supporter and champion of women and supporter of the hashtag MeToo movement, the statement immediately made no sense. The women say they did not consent and that many of the assaults happened outside the bedroom. His dismissal, their complaints, didn't fit his persona. In the Atlantic magazine, writer Julia Loft tweeted, the Schneiderman story is yet another confirmation that the man who rails the loudest against the sinner is often even a bigger sinner himself. The story of what he allegedly did to women is sickening and haunting and is only made worse by the role of politics in it. At one point, according to the New Yorker article, Schneiderman told a victim who fought back while he was beating her, you know, hitting an officer of the law is a felony. He had the power and would use it to shut her down. One of the women said that her friends dissuaded her from coming forward. A number of them advised her to keep the story to herself, arguing that Schneiderman was too valuable of a politician for the Democrats to lose. She described this response as heartbreaking. Another of Schneiderman's victims didn't initially complain because he's a good attorney general. He's doing good things. I didn't want to jeopardize that. The story should be an eye-opener that our tribal political squabbles have gone too far. We have to stop putting political goals before everything else when we put them before our own physical safety. It is long past time to reassess. Carol Markowitz, columnist at the New York Post, written for Time, USA Today, Observer, Heat Street, Federalist, Daily Beast, and elsewhere. I was going to say, seems like everywhere. And this was an op-ed piece, apparently, in Fox News from last night. As the story is still breaking, and as we said, the question that we have is whether a criminal investigation will start on this. Again, the women coming out and, you know, very salacious allegations. If you read the New Yorker article, which I did right before I got on the air this morning, and then when you see his response to it, as was pointed out in Dan Abrams' Law and Crime website, he admitted, in essence, is admitting the actions took place. He's just claiming that they were consensual, which means, is there a possibility of investigation? One would think yes, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if the start of an investigation, you know, was announced here in the next couple of days or week. To you we go. Let's go to Nick in Detroit. Nick, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Nick. You're on the radio. Hi.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Yeah, this is kind of the only defense that this guy has, is saying that even the slappings or the chokings were consensual. If these girls are going to tell the police, they're probably going to give specific dates, times, and locations that this occurred. He can say, no, I slept with this woman 50 times, and we did this all 50 times, not the five occasions that she's saying. And same with the next woman and the next woman. And it sounds like he's got some sort of dominance thing, and they've got some sort of submissive thing going. And that might be part of their foreplay, part of their, you know, relationship outside the bedroom. Such as, hey, are you
you can
give her a smack.
Right, you can use that as a defense without question, but would it work in this case? And again, where this is all speculation because we don't know the specifics of this case, the problems that you would encounter would be there's more than one woman. If it's a he said, she said, and it's one woman who, mistook what one person thought it was consent and one did not, maybe you have a chance. When you have four women, and who knows if now more will come out of the woodwork on this, but right now you've got four who seem to be specific in what the allegations are and what the physical harm was. And many of these, as was pointed out, happened outside of the bedroom. One was a woman one was a woman who just met him and he slapped her out of the blue, one is claiming.
Did they sleep together after that? Because if so, I'm going to try that.
I'm usually
the one getting my face slapped.
But the whole point is that's not, you know, if you're talking role playing, that probably would have to be much more specific and without question consensual. I guess if you're going to, well, the advice would be if I'm an attorney, if you're going to, you know, they talk about contracts for just having sex. Well, if you're going to be involved in that, maybe you should have an ironclad contract with evidence that both were consenting every single time. Otherwise, you get in trouble. But that would be the problem here. The problem here would be that you have a number of women that have come aboard and have stated that it happened. Even one of the cases where it happened in the bedroom, you know, they were both closed. There was nothing romantic going on, and boom, it came out of nowhere. So those are tough things to defend as being a part of you know, that it was consensual in role playing, and that's the whole point. When you get down to a lot of cases like this, it's, you know, who is believable if it gets to a jury, and if you have more than one. Look, the Bill Cosby just, you know, went through it. They brought in, even though they only went after him on the charge from the one woman who made the allegation that he was charged with, they were able to bring in more women who verified, yes, this is what he did. And so, again, it's the numbers game that could hurt him in this case legally. And, again, it's just the article written in The New Yorker, but it has caused the former Attorney General of New York resign. Eric Schneiderman resigning from office after four women accuse him of physical abuse. And you can read, like I said, you can the article's in The New Yorker. You can read it. It's all over the place online. And, again, you can come to your own conclusions as to the specifics of the allegations from all of the women. And they talk about the actual instances in quite specific detail as to what happened at that point. So 866-90 Red Eye, if you'd like to get in. Coming up here, a new study. You're going to love this study. Are you a climate change denier? Are you a climate skeptic? New study out, shows that climate skeptics are more eco-friendly and more eco-conscious than global warming alarmists. If you believed that the world is doomed because of climate change, you are more likely to be less caring about Mother Earth than those who do not share your opinion. We will get to that and the Democrat leadership that's promoting open borders. Yep, the Democratic leader promoting open borders. We said it all along. And the one poll that's out there, which was like, whoa, as to the poll of Democrats of who believes in open borders, sell that one in 2018. I think they should promote it more. All coming up, plus your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, you need a tuning solution? Bully Dog Big Rig now has ECM tuning starting at $9.99. Justin Burt from Bully Dog fills us in.
We did some market research last year and listened to a bunch of the drivers out there and kind of realized that pricing was super important to some of the fellows on the road and readjusted some of our approach to the pricing in the market.
Justin tells us about the good, better, and best solution.
So the good applications for our ECM tuners would be our Watchdog, which just is a monitoring device for the drivers to keep an eye on the essential aspects of the truck, boost, heat, temperature, and the turbo, and the exhaust, and the coolant, things like that. Better would be our ECM tuner, which is where our actual aftermarket ECM calibrations come into play. That's a tuner that allows the driver to plug into their data port, load one of three pre-loaded dyno-tested calibrations that would give them either economy, power, or the third setting is an economy slash power tune, which gives them a little bit of both worlds. The best aspect would be the heavy duty GT tuner, which is basically the Watchdog and ECM tuner into one unit. So we've got monitoring capabilities, and you've also got those three preloaded calibrations for your application that'll give you fuel mileage or power or a little bit of both. So the website, bigrig.bullydog.com.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. He has a morning off. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Steve in Beckley, West Virginia, about the resignation of New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman after being accused by four women in that New Yorker article of physical abuse. Steve, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Great to be with you, Gary. I think this Eric Schneiderman guy, role-playing, I think this is a case of open mouth and insert foot. I think I'd love to be the prosecutor in the courtroom here. Tell us about your role playing. Were you playing king and queen? Or were you hooker and pimp? Were you a coyote and human cargo? Or were you husband and wife? I mean, please tell us so we can get a better picture.
you're talking about what would happen in a real, real courtroom. And when you look at least what the allegations of the women are, that role-playing and discussing what they were going to be, even when it happened in the bedroom, had nothing to do with the physical assaults, and the assaults that happened outside the bedroom certainly did not. So you make a great case that a prosecutor let's put it this way, if you're going to use that as a defense, that this was role-playing in the bedroom, then the prosecutor is going to get very, 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 very specific. And then those women are going to be asked the same questions about whether how he is answering is true or not. But, after, like I said, and this is still breaking news, it's a long article in The New Yorker, and it goes through all the different allegations. And there may be more. Who knows? I don't know what else, what is in that article, whether that's the totality of all the allegations that they have against the former attorney general. But, this will, This is a high profile story, and it's a high profile story for a couple of reasons. First off, when you look at the history of some of New York's well known politicians, Anthony Weiner, Elliot Spitzer, and now Schneiderman here, it's something that's going to stay in the news for a while. Also, because it's Schneiderman, as was pointed out by the Fox News op-ed piece, was viewed as an upcoming member of the resistance who was going to get Donald Trump. And so you're going to have Republicans, loyal supporters of Donald Trump, that are going to be screaming and are going to be quoted in newspapers as demanding an investigation. Then just looking at the substance of the allegations themselves, take the partisanship, take the pop culture angle out of it, take the tabloids out of it, you get to the seriousness of the actual charges, the allegations that are being made, and then looking at it just from an investigator's point of view, is this something that is prosecutable? And I think many investigators would say, well, look, we don't know, but we're going to start an investigation on it. So I would suspect that you're going to have law enforcement. If law enforcement around the country started looking into Harvey Weinstein, well, then the guy that was in charge of the civil suit for Harvey Weinstein in New York, certainly I believe that you're going to have law enforcement, or at least the call for law enforcement to look into this. And that's, I haven't even talked about the pressure that will be exerted because of the hashtag MeToo culture that exists in this country right now that demands accountability. So I would say that Mr. Schneiderman may be in a heap of trouble right now. And again, with his statement that it was role-playing, as was brought up earlier from Dan Abrams' Law and Crime website, he's admitting that the acts took place. Or some of the acts took place. But he didn't say some took place and some did not. He said, that role-playing happened in these sexual relationships. So he's admitting that the actions happened. He just disagrees as to the context of how they took place with the women. So right now it doesn't look good. All right, coming up, more of your calls and comments. If you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also, we'll get to the point. I want to tell you about the Democratic leader that is promoting open borders, the new study that is out on climate change skeptics versus global warming alarmists. More on the whole Iran thing, because the president probably will make the decision. He's supposed to make the decision today on the entire Iran deal. The allegations still out there, about John Kerry and the National Review article, and parts of it are just great, where they say, look, Democrats claim that they care about collusion. If you want a perfect example of collusion, you can't come up with a better example of collusion by the Democrat standard than what John Kerry did. He colluded with the nation that exports the most terrorism to work against the policies of the current United States government. Forget about the Logan Act. Let's go to collusion, because that seems to be the word that so many on the left have enjoyed for such a long time. If you want collusion, you have a perfect example of it, and John Kerry isn't denying it. His spokesperson isn't denying it. He's promoting it. He's talking to other members of Congress about his experiences colluding with the Iranians. 866-90-RED-EYE if you'd like to get in.
anytime, 24 hours a day. Say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
And he's Eric. He has the morning off. I'm Gary, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Greg in San Diego about the New Yorker story on Eric Schneiderman that forced him to resign, the Attorney General of New York. He was viewed as the one of the leaders of the resistance against Donald Trump. The story that we had mentioned earlier that said, is this the man that will take down Donald Trump? He has now resigned because of physical assault allegations from four different women. We go to Greg. Hi, Greg. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Gary. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, I have to say that I disagree with the idea that this is going to linger, because I think it's over already. The same way as Kevin Spacey, I think, was it, that also had these allegations. Weinstein is essentially over. I think there was a whole slew of the Me Too people that came out that alleged all kinds of things. Schneiderman is I mean, they put pressure on these people and they get the people off the board so they can focus on Trump. They do not want a single distraction from the destruction of Donald Trump.
Well, wait a minute. That it's Schneiderman who initiated the civil lawsuits that are still pending against Harvey Weinstein.
Sure, but
and Weinstein still has, as far as I know, there's still criminal investigations going on from him. About him.
Sure, but you don't hear about it. It's not in the public.
Well, Weinstein was in the. Weinstein has been in for months.
You hear about him. I mean, I think in passing, I think they were already talking about reviving him and bringing him back so he can do more movies. I mean, I don't think it's in the public eye as much as, let's say, that, you
well,
know.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the media coverage of it. I'm talking about whether there will be a criminal investigation on it because of the assault charges. And as to the media covering it, some media will, some won't.
I'm thinking purely in political realm, is whether or not the public is going to hear about it enough to affect the outcome of elections and politics in general.
Oh no! It's not going to affect that at all. That's not going to affect that in the slightest. No.
Yeah,
no, it won't affect that. But I hope. Look, one of the best. If they didn't have this obsession with Trump, we would not have found out that it was the Democrats, by their own definition, who colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. The obsession with Trump is how we find out more information eventually as to what they've done wrong. So I've got no problem with them focusing on Trump.
But Gary, is the public perception that occurred, or that Trump? I think the last poll they did, most of them, they might have been only Democrats, but still believe that it was Trump that colluded with the Democrats.
Well, no. The Democrats believed that the Russians, they didn't ask the question with Trump, that the Russians hacked the election, and more of them believed it than a year before. But when it came to actually Trump with collusion, as you know, everybody's backing off on it. The Democrats are backing off on the dossier now. They keep backtracking on it. You're not going to change the minds of people that minds don't want to be changed. But what I care about is the legal process moving forward in all of this.
Right. I'm sure there may be some legal repercussions, but for me, it's always what is going to be the political outcome, what is going to be the effect on the election, especially the midterms.
All right, good question. Whose mind are you trying to change in an election? Whose minds are you trying to change? Exactly, and that's roughly what? 10 to 20% of the electorate out there. And their minds have slowly changed. They look at it. Many independents look at it and say, now you're not going to convince Democrats. Democrats are going to say Donald Trump, committed every sort of heinous act, even if there's no evidence whatsoever. You're not going to change them. Who you change are the independents. And the independents have changed on the way that they feel towards Trump. Look at how the polls keep moving up slightly every single month. Trump is doing a little bit better in all the polls. That's not the Democrats making that happen, even though it might be some. Because remember, there are some still Democrats supporting, but that's independents slowly moving, and maybe some Democrats. Maybe a few Democrats. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's simply amazing that Trump has been able to survive as long as he had, considering he does not have the Republican Party there to help him, and he is just under constant barrage and attack.
But that can have the opposite effect, as I believe it is having. You can get to the point of understanding that, you know, that the problem, and as we have said, and I think this is one thing we've talked about here, that the swamp, remember, the swamp used to be McConnell and Boehner. That used to be the swamp. The swamp is no longer the Republican leadership. People realize that the swamp is a number of bureaucrats inside of the FBI, the Justice Department, and other areas of our government that were put in there by Obama, and maybe even previous to them, who liked the status quo and was fine with doing whatever they thought they could get away with. And now that they possibly can't, they're rebelling, and that's what you're seeing. And before they're going to go down, there's going to be fury. And I think that's part of what you're seeing right now, and that's where the legal process hopefully slowly keeps moving in the direction that it is moving, because what you want here is transparency. I want transparency across the board. I believe that the president should demand transparency more and even threaten that, you know, look, if you don't do it, I'll say right now it's no longer classified. We want this information out there. I can do that. And then say that I'm interfering in an investigation by demanding transparency.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's not at its end game yet, not nearly near its end game. And the fact is, all we can hope for is that the truth gets out there, and we're learning more of the truth every single day. James Comey did his book tour. Do you think that independents think as highly as James Comey as they might have 15 months ago after that tour, or did he do a disservice to himself?
No, I think he injured himself, clearly.
Exactly. So you slowly move. People slowly find out what the truth is. It moves extremely slow, but people, and it may not come to the political reality that I would like to see in a year or two. That might not happen. But the best that we can do is show the American people what the truth is, have the truth out to the American people, and they're going to decide either way. But as I've looked at it, the best that I can do is get the truth out there and let the truth be known. And once the truth is out there, the American people are going to do what they wish to do with the truth. And sometimes it goes my way, sometimes it doesn't go my way. But the only thing you can do is make sure that we get the truth and we get to the bottom, because that's what you really want in a constitutional republic. You want that transparency. You want those in power to be accountable to we the people. Now, if we the people choose not to hold them accountable, that's our choice.
Right. I mean, my only fear is that eventually there will be something that they find, even with this ridiculous actress, there's something that they can just point to and say, a lie, perjury, and that will be on the front pages for the next months, you know, instead of the Schneidermans, instead of the Weinsteins, instead of the Spaceys.
Which is why probably you're not going to see Donald Trump testify.
Testify, right. That would be absolutely the wrong thing to do for him.
I don't believe that he will on that just because of where they're headed. And I was listening to a story today that were I think it was on CNN where they were talking about the same thing. They're looking for obstruction of justice in Michael Flynn. Well, wait a minute. None of that's obstruction of justice. They're looking at an area. And that's the other thing, too. We mentioned the courts, how the courts are looking at this. And they've been beat back twice in over the weekend by two different judges who said, no, you can't do that. Once you start bringing this to, you know, the courts and say, well, this is criminal activity or it's not criminal activity, then that's when the judges start looking at it and saying, whoa, okay, you know, what are you actually doing? What are you actually doing here? But what I want is the truth to come out, because I think when you get all the transparency of what went on in the FBI and the Justice Department, and once all those documents come out, we're going to have a much clearer picture, and so will the American people. And then that's when this may all fall apart. But it's tough to do it when we don't have the full truth. And I just hope that the president, especially as we're coming, you know, to the summer and the midterms, says, look, if you guys don't release it, I'll declassify it.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'll declassify it because this isn't classified information. And if you're doing it to have the FBI, you know, hide behind it, because one who pointed out the other day? Was it Kimberly Strauss of the Wall Street Journal? That every single thing that they've talked about that we couldn't let out because it was classified and national security would be at stake, none of it was. It was all lies. It was all, they were covering their own posteriors. And so we should get to a point where the executive branch, because remember, the reason that the Justice Department won't remember what they used as the excuse not to release what Devin Nunes wants from the House Intelligence Committee. Remember what they said, the explanation? Well, no, we basically were claiming we're the executive branch and we don't have to release this to you. We're the executive branch and we get to keep these things secret. Well, who runs the executive branch? Donald Trump. He runs the executive branch. And what they're basically saying is you have Devin Nunes saying, look, we believe that the FBI, we believe that the Justice Department, when it came to the FISA process, that they went after the Trump campaign and they didn't follow the proper procedure, and we believe there's possible law breaking in that whole FISA process and outing that the FBI, that the Obama FBI and Justice Department was involved with. We want the transparency. We want this information. We want this this intelligence. We want to know it was on the application. And they're stating, no, you can't get it because we're claiming that this is the executive branch and we get to do this. Well, wait a minute. Then you're going against what you're the leader of the executive branch who could order you to release it. And so they're sort of daring the president. He's getting involved in the investigation. He's saying release all the evidence. So it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And I don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to be interesting. But all I want to do is get closer to the truth. Give me transparency. I can't control what happens after that, but give me transparency. Give us what the American people expect in a constitutional republic. And that is the bureaucrats are accountable to we the people. And that's through our elected representatives and those that get the top secret clearance to monitor and do oversight over law enforcement and the intelligence agencies. That's all I'm asking for. Why? Because that's the system that we're in. That's what we're about. We have a line open if you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley. He has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. Check this one out. A study by Cornell and the University of Michigan found that those highly concerned about climate change were the least likely to engage in recycling and other eco-friendly behaviors than global warming skeptics. Published in the April edition of the Journal of Environmental Psychology, the one-year study broke 600 participants into three groups based on their level of concern about climate change. Highly concerned, cautiously worried, and skeptical. The highly concerned cluster was the most supportive of government climate policies, but was least likely to report individual level actions, whereas the skeptical opposed policy solutions were the most likely to report engaging in individual level pro-environmental behaviors, the researchers concluded. Conducting the study entitled Believing in Climate Change but Behaving Sustainably where Cornell Associate Professor Neil Lewis, University of Michigan researchers Michael Hall and Phoebe Ellsworth. The skeptics were the more likely than the highly concerned to recycle, use public transportation, reusable shopping bags, and buy eco-friendly products. Belief in climate change predicted support for government policies to combat climate change, but did not generally translate into individual-level self-reported pro-environmental behavior. Anyone surprised at that? So, there you go.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. In the news today, well, the West Virginia Senate primary, the Republican Senate primary, this from the Weekly Standard from yesterday. Republicans are panicking as internal polls show that Don Blankenship, a coal baron who spent time in jail for a mining disaster that killed 29 workers, was surging into the lead in the West Virginia Senate GOP primary over Attorney General Patrick Morrissey and Congressman Evan Jenkins. We've heard about this for the last couple of days, that there were some internal polling out there. Weekly Standard actually has the numbers of the poll. This is the results of an internal campaign poll conducted for one rival Senate campaign on Saturday and Sunday, where Blankenship 31%, Jenkins 28%, and Morrissey 27%. The results of another internal poll conducted Friday and Saturday were Blankenship 28%, Morrissey 27%, and Jenkins 14%. 2 weeks earlier, the same rival campaign found Blankenship at 14%, Morrissey at 29%, and Jenkins at 26%. Politico reported Saturday night that internal polling showed that Blankenship was surging, but specific numbers are being reported for the first time by the Weekly Standard. President Trump, who overwhelmingly carried the state in 2016, weighed in on Twitter on Monday morning, saying, "To the great people of West Virginia, we have together a really great chance to keep making a difference. Problem is, Don Blankenship, currently running for Senate, can't win the general election in your state. No way. Remember Alabama. Vote Representative Jenkins or A.G. Morrissey." Said one West Virginia campaign official, told the Weekly Standard, "If it's truly a two-point race, that Trump tweet is going to make a difference." What explains the Blankenship surge? The debate Monday on Fox News helped him, because Morrissey and Jenkins did what's kind of playing out on TV. They're slicing up each other, said the campaign official. Don got to be the one-liner folksy guy. Second, Blankenship has taken up all the news coverage in the race by labeling Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell as Cocaine Mitch and launching racist attacks against McConnell for creating jobs for China people. McConnell's wife, an American citizen, was born in Taiwan. McConnell's allies have spent over $1.3 million in an effort to defeat Blankenship. And so that's a situation going on right there. Now, when it comes to internal polls, again, a lot, it's tough when you look at this race. And the reason it's tough when you look at this race is because we're talking about internal polls. There haven't been many polls. I went to realclearpolitics.com. I couldn't find one poll, one public poll on it. And one of the problems with internal polls are who is doing them, what is the basis for doing them, because do they want to market whatever campaign does that poll? How do they wish to, because they wish to market that poll in some way. Either they're going to use the internal poll to figure out what to do, or they're going to, the fear is, skew a poll to be able to use it for whatever public relations they wish to use it for. And so with the internal polls, it's tough to figure out exactly what's going on. As one person pointed out, though, since it's the Morsi and Jenkins doing the polls, and apparently not Blankenship, the Blankenship could be up by more. That he might not just be up 31 to 28 or 28 to 27 and 1. He could be up maybe 5 points higher. So it's really, really tough to call it. But the whole thing is, look, you're not going to be able to take the Manchin seat if Blankenship, who has spent time for labor violations and a mining disaster that killed 29 workers, no chance in hell is he going to beat. No chance would he have to win, Republicans believe, in the November election. And they want that seat. And they believe they can get that seat. So we'll see what happens. But just so you know why it's in the news and what polling, I just thought you'd want to know what polling they're actually using. Because if you're looking for a public poll on it, I couldn't find one on Real Clear Politics. And that's really rare that in a Senate GOP race like that you couldn't find one. In the other breaking news overnight, four women accused New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman of physical abuse, of assault. The New Yorker wrote the article on it, and it came out last night. And 3 hours after the publication of the story, Schneiderman resigned as Attorney General. He has been one of the symbols for the hashtag MeToo movement. He's the one that got the civil suit going against Harvey Weinstein in New York. He is the one that's been written about as one of the leaders of the Democrat resistance. We talked earlier about the article that was written. Is this the guy that will take down Donald Trump? Talked about the fact that back late last year, when there was discussion out there, would Trump pardon anyone? He was one of the first to come out as an attorney general and say he can pardon anybody for federal laws that may be broken. But if they broke a New York state law, figuring, you know, Trump resigning in New York state, we'll get him and we will prosecute them. And so, therefore, that article came out. Is this a guy that will take down Donald Trump? To read you just a couple of lines here, because it's important for you to get the context of what the allegations are, because it's the New Yorker story that is four women accused New York's attorney general of physical abuse. As they write here, as New York State's highest ranking law enforcement officer, Schneiderman, who was 63, has used his authority to take legal action against a disgraced film mogul, Harvey Weinstein, and to demand greater compensation for the victims of Weinstein's alleged sexual crimes. Last month, when The Times and this magazine were awarded a joint Pulitzer Prize for the coverage of sexual harassment, Schneiderman issued a congratulatory tweet praising the brave men and women who spoke up about sexual harassment that they had endured at the hands of powerful men. Without these women, he noted, there would be no critical national reckoning underway. Now Schneiderman is facing a reckoning of his own. As his prominence as a voice against sexual misconduct has risen, so too has the distress of four women with whom he had romantic relationships or encounters. They accuse Schneiderman of having subjected them to non-consensual physical violence. All have been reluctant to speak out, fearing reprisal. But two of the women, Michelle Manning Barash and Tanya Selvaratnam, have talked to the New Yorker on the record because they feel that doing so could protect other women. They allege that he repeatedly hit them, often after drinking, frequently in bed, and never with their consent. They both categorize the abuse he inflicted on them as assault. They did not report their allegations to police at the time, but both said they eventually sought medical attention after having been slapped hard across the ear and face and also choked. One said Schneiderman warned her that he would have her followed and her phones tapped, and both say that he threatened to kill them if they broke up with them. Schneiderman's spokesperson said he never made any of those threats. A third romantic partner of Schneiderman said that he also repeatedly subjected her to non-consensual physical violence, but she told them that she is too frightened still of him to come forward. The New Yorker has independently vetted the accounts that the other two unnamed women gave of her of their allegations. A fourth woman, an attorney who has held prominent positions in the New York legal community, said that Schneiderman made an advance towards her. When she rebuffed him, he slapped her across the face with such force that it left a mark that lingered the next day. She recalled screaming in surprise and pain and beginning to cry, and says she's felt frightened. She has asked to remain identified, but shared a photograph of the injury with the New Yorker. In a statement, Schneiderman said, "In the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line that I would not cross." And they go on. This is the copies that I have. I've just read you less than a page of it, and it's 16 pages. I think one of the things that you should know in the article is Schneiderman's activism on behalf of feminist causes has increasingly won him praise from women's groups. On May 1st, the New York-based National Institute for Reproductive Health honored him as one of three champions of choice at its annual fundraising luncheon. Accepting the award, Schneiderman said, "If a woman cannot control her body, she is not truly equal. But as Manning Barish sees it, you cannot be a champion of women when you are hitting them and choking them in bed and saying to them, you blanking whore." That's a quote. She says of Schneiderman's involvement in the Weinstein investigation, "How can you put a perpetrator in charge of the country's most important sexual assault case?" The other woman describes Schneiderman as a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde figure and says that seeing him lauded as a supporter of women has made her feel sick, adding, "This is a man who has staked his entire career, his personal narrative, on being a champion for women publicly, but he abuses them privately. He needs to be called out." Quite a bit has been written overnight after this has come out. And by the way, after this story was released within 3 hours, he announced his resignation as Attorney General. One of the questions that has come up that we have talked about and we'll continue talking about here in just a couple of minutes is whether there might be criminal charges and whether his statement hurt him or helped him, or did it acknowledge that something actually happened and it's enough for investigators to start a criminal investigation on it. We'll get to that and more. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Corn planting nationally continues to be just a bit behind normal. USDA reporting 39% of the crops in the ground as we start this week. That's about 5% behind the five-year average. But one analyst says even if farmers were further behind, chances are it wouldn't make any difference in the final yields come harvest time. USDA Outlook Board Chairman Seth Meyer told us the old rule of thumb about the later you plant, the lower the yields is just no longer the case.
When folks make an assessment that a slower April or a wetter April leads to lower yields, these types of relationships just haven't held for the last several seasons.
At least since about 2009. Maybe it's because these days a farmer can be terribly behind in planting one day and then, with today's technology, be caught up the next. And besides, so far this season, aside from corn, planting of soybeans, cotton, rice, many other crops nationally is close to or ahead of the usual pace. In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio 866-90 of Red Eye, and so the by the way, I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, so it's you and me. Just so much going on out there. 3 hours is what it took for New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman to step down Monday night. I'm reading here from the Washington Post here, just to show you how some of the coverage is on it. Gotcha, tweets Kellyanne Conway as Trump supporters revel in Schneiderman resignation. And I had brought this up earlier, that, you know, the question, because it came up with these allegations against him that are clearly assault allegations. You know, what is, you know, where are we at right now? Where is the mindset right now, you know, to prosecute him? Well, clearly, you know, you have the Me Too movement out. These are clearly allegations of criminal wrongdoing. This isn't about these. This isn't about something civilly has been wrong to someone, or a small miscommunication. These women basically are saying, "Look, this guy assaulted us, and did it more than once, and it was outside of the role playing." But when you look, for example, the Me Too movement, when you see that clearly he is one that went after Harvey Weinstein with some of the civil suits, advocated the fact that people that have actually gotten money from Harvey Weinstein should get more, and has just cried for justice against the wrongdoings of Donald Trump, where he's been called the man who might take down Donald Trump. Well, that isn't going to happen now. And as I said, you are going to have, you know, from the other side, which you see here again, clearly from the Washington Post headline, that Trump supporters revel in Schneiderman resignation, that there's going to be the pressure also coming from all sides to prosecute him. And then when you go just to the investigative side, take all the politics, where we are in our culture right now, the whole Me Too movement, wherever, and just take it from an investigative point of view. And you look at it and you clearly say, these women are saying, and they've said it, you know, on the record to a newspaper, they've given their names, these are these specific allegations, all happened in the last couple of years, statute of limitations is not a problem. You've got two women who have given their names, two other women who have not. We have enough to start an investigation. And with his admission, and we'll get to that here coming up following the bottom of the hour, with his admission that something did happen, he called it role playing, but that's an admission that, okay, I'm calling it role playing, they're calling it something else. Is that enough to start an investigation from the mind of a criminal investigator? And I would have to say, absolutely there is. There would be no doubt about that at all. So I do believe in the next couple of days, or in the next week, you will see. Well, you're going to see, I think today, the calls for an investigation, and I believe that you will see an investigation. I'd be very surprised if you didn't see an investigation start here very, very soon. It's time for your national forecast, brought to you by Omnitracs.
Areas of heavy showers in North and South Dakota begin day two of the work week. If you're traveling from Fargo on I-29 over to Bismarck on I-94 or north of I-90 near Sioux Falls, you'll certainly need the windshield wipers this morning. That band of showers will roll through into the upper Midwest for tomorrow as well, and it's a slow-moving system, so we could see some flash flooding associated with the system because, again, today, this particular low pressure and frontal boundary makes its way from today into Thursday, only moving from North Dakota to Indiana. And we could see some flash flooding in the upper Mississippi River Valley as a result as well. 90-degree weather for most of the southern states today, including Dallas, over the 90-degree mark today. New York City, a pleasant 68 with sunshine. 74 for Chicago, thunderstorms tomorrow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
And thank you so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
In the Octagon now, 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Eric has the morning off, so it's just you and me. I just want to play this is my audio cut for the day. I like it because it shows the hypocrisy that exists out there. As you know, the president is going to make an announcement 2 o'clock Eastern time, I believe it is this afternoon, on the Iran deal. What to do with the Iran deal, which was a terrible deal, which was built on a lie both from the Iranians and the Obama administration. The interesting side note to this is John Kerry meeting with Iranian officials in an attempt to keep the Iranian deal intact. And Molly Hemingway from The Federalist was on with Brett Baer yesterday on Fox News.
Molly, it seems that, you know, John Kerry is fighting to save the deal that he negotiated.
Well, and it's also interesting because for a year and a half, we've had everyone in the media and law enforcement claim with a straight face that there's something called the Logan Act, which is this 18th century law that prohibits people from doing freelance work with foreign governments. It is clearly unconstitutional. It would never be enforced. And yet it was used to query Mike Flynn, and contrary to what James Comey said in his interview with you, that was the interview where the FBI agent said that he gave no evidence of lying, and yet it was because they were doing a Logan Act query, supposedly because he shouldn't have been talking to Ambassador Kislyak as part of his duties.
As the incoming security advisor.
They said that they were really concerned. And here you have John Kerry, who has no role in the administration, doing freelance work trying to save a deal that is completely contravening the goal of the Trump administration. And all those people who were claiming that the Logan Act was a real thing are oddly silent right now.
Yeah.
And the other point that I read in National Review yesterday is, what about the collusion? John Kerry's, and we mentioned this on yesterday's show, John Kerry's colluding with the Iranians. Colluding with the world's leader of exporting terrorism. And nothing. What happened to the whole collusion narrative? Thought collusion was important to those on the left. Nothing. Logan Act, nothing. Now, I agree with Molly Hemingway, and we've said this before. If you enforce the Logan Act, it would be unconstitutional. You can talk to whoever you want. And that's why the Logan Act never went anywhere. What was it? 1799, I think. That was 1799, is that what it was? Or I forgot what year it was. I think it was 1799 is when it came out. It's really, you know, never been used. Why? Because probably one of the reasons is you really couldn't enforce it. So I wanted to play that because it's just, you know, as she pointed out, for a year and a half, Logan Act, Logan Act, Logan Act against Michael Flynn. And he was part of an incoming administration. Here, John Kerry does it and is admitting it. He's talking about it. He went to Congress. He told them what he was doing. And nothing, No anger whatsoever. Meanwhile, on the Iran deal, maybe Brett Stevens in the New York Times said it in a very concise way. The sanctions lifting will only occur as Iran takes the steps agreed, including addressing possible military dimensions. That's a quote. And he writes that with State Department spokesperson John Kirby in June of 2015, speaking just as negotiations for the Iran nuclear deal were wrapping up. But Tehran did not take the steps agreed. The deal was founded on a lie. Two lies, actually. The first was Iran's declaration to the International Atomic Energy Agency prior to the implementation of the deal of the full extent of its past nuclear work. This was essential, both as a test of Tehran's sincerity and as a benchmark for understanding just how close it was being able to assemble and deliver a nuclear warhead. The second lie was the Obama administration's promise that it was serious about getting answers from Tehran. In a moment of candor, then Secretary of State John Kerry admitted, "We are not fixated on Iran specifically accounting for what they did at one point in time or another," end of quote, but then promised Congress that Iran would provide the accounting. This was part of the testimony where even liberals were saying John Kerry needs to shut up. That was when the White House still feared the Congress might block the deal. When it failed to do so, thanks to a Democratic filibuster, the administration contented itself with the make-believe process in which Iran pretended to make a full declaration, but the rest of the world and the rest of the world pretended to believe it. Iran's answers and explanations for many of the IAEA's concerns were at best partial, but overall stonewalling. David Albright and his colleagues at the Nonpartisan Institute for Science and International Security wrote in December of 2015, needed access to sites was either denied or tightly controlled as to preclude adequate inspections. So much then for the deal providing an unprecedented level of transparency for monitoring Iranian compliance, as the Obama administration said and lied about. So much also for the notion that Iran has honored its end of the bargain. It didn't. This should render the agreement null and void. And then he mentions to the Benjamin Netanyahu and everything that they got, which proves they didn't tell us the truth. Look, the American people understood it. Remember the polling that was done, where it was over, I believe, over 60% of Americans a couple of weeks after, you know, Obama said, here's the deal, that they believe that the president of the United States made a deal with the world's leading exporter of terrorism that made the United States and its citizens less secure. People believed it, but it was still just a little bit of a blip of a story. And finally here on the Eric Schneiderman resignation because of the allegations of physically assaulting women. And an interesting point that was brought up in Dan Abrams' Law and Crime website, written by Allura Nanos, who wrote, Eric Schneiderman's statement just made the situation way, way worse for him legally. It was a question that we had been asking early on, and this was something that when I went to sleep, I take a nap before I come in, went to sleep, this story didn't exist. When I woke up, he had already resigned. So the whole story happened when I was asleep, so I was, you know, had to read the entire thing when I got into work, and then was looking for any type of analysis on it, and Law and Crime website had some early this morning and talked about the fact that Monday evening four women came forward claiming that while in relationships with the former now New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, that he assaulted them. The specific allegations, as reported by the New Yorker, were that Schneiderman repeatedly hit them often after drinking, frequently in bed, and never with their consent. That's a quote. And she writes here that it was just really shocking, his response, especially from an attorney general who should know the law. Part of his response was, in the privacy of intimate relationships, I have engaged in role-playing and other consensual sexual activity. I have not assaulted anyone. I have never engaged in non-consensual sex, which is a line I would not cross. To the casual observer, it might sound like a flat denial of wrongdoing. It really isn't, though. And I will admit, that's the first thing when I saw that I went, oh, well, he's claiming, you know, it was all just consensual. From a legal standpoint, this statement is vaguely disastrous for Schneiderman. The women's allegations, which have included slapping and choking, have a potential to expose Schneiderman to criminal liability. And then she goes to the New York Penal Code for assault and sexual assault, which she said either could apply to the allegations against him. And then she writes, Schneiderman's statement comes awfully close to confirming that the violent acts in question did actually occur. Not a good look for the attorney general. If a prosecutor could prove that any of these women suffered physical injury as a result of Schneiderman's reckless, negligent, or intentional actions, that's going back to the what's in the law, he's in trouble. Now, Schneiderman's reference to role-playing was likely of his way of raising consent as a defense. Hey, it was role-playing. We both consented to it. Consent, legal for, you said I could do this, can absolutely be a valid defense to assault. In fact, the women, agreed to being hit or choked during sex, as part of a truly consensual role play, there'd be no assault. The problem is, though, that anyone who asserts the not guilty because of consent defense admits to performing the underlying action. And consent is a finicky defense because to work, it must have been knowing and voluntary on the part of the person giving it. Even if the person throwing a punch thought his partner had been consenting, he might have been wrong. In such a case, no consent means no defense to criminal assault. The other thing about consent Schneiderman must know is that it has a limited scope. Just because a person consents to one thing, sex for example, doesn't mean that she consents to all the other things, being slapped for example. Again, admitting that he engaged in role-playing as a direct response to accusations of physical assault leaves the door open for the possibility that what was naughty sex in Schneiderman's mind was in reality a full-on crime. Says, and why in the name of all that is Weinstein would anyone voluntarily admit to engaging in potentially legally risky sex? Now, the burden of proof is on the prosecutors. Proving details of a long ago sex would be difficult, if not outright impossible. Why on earth would any law enforcement professional offer up an unsolicited admission to something so potentially problematic? I just don't get it. There's no upside for Schneiderman here. His statement wasn't an apology, so there are no PR points to be won. It wasn't a full admission of guilt either, but rather it was a factual admission that could come back to bite him in his role-playing posterior. For a guy who has shown a serious gift for strategy with respect to plans to prosecute President Trump, I'd frankly have expected better. So there you go. And that was a question that we had legally. Is there a possibility of investigation here? And, you know, some of these incidents from reading it, you know, 2015, 2016. So statute of limitations, I'm assuming in New York law, is not up on that. So we will see what happens. But I'm going to guess that there probably will be a call for an investigation and probably a call for criminal charges that you will hear coming up later today as the news day gets underway. I just would expect that to happen. And then we'll see what happens and whether an investigation is started by the appropriate law enforcement agencies, which may be the local law enforcement agencies, I would guess, from where any of these incidents might have taken place, to maybe because if they happened when he was attorney general, maybe the New York State Police gets involved in it. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This engine report is brought to you by Detroit. The DD15 is designed to provide its peak power and torque between 1,000 and 1,500 RPMs. This fuel economy sweet spot means there isn't much more power available at 1,800 RPM than at 1,400. The only thing being accomplished is burning more fuel without any real benefit. While cruising, try to keep the engine between 1,050 and 1,450 RPMs for maximum efficiency. Also, upshift around 1,650 RPMs or sooner to stay in the sweet spot. Speed is the enemy of fuel economy. On average, every 1 mile per hour increase in road speed above 55 costs 0.1 mpg, which adds up by the mile. Cruising in the high 50 to low 60 mph range can help you get the most out of every gallon of fuel. Ultimately, traffic on surface roads and stoplights will impact travel time far more than a few mph on the highway.
For Shell Rotella, that's the engine report.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara. So that survey was done. The average American works more hours than a medieval peasant did. About 200 hours more a year is what they claim in this new study that was done. So, of course, we had asked the question, were they filling out time cards in those medieval times? How do they know how many hours the medieval peasant was working? And even if they worked less hours, is that why they were peasants? And didn't have money to spend? Oh, so many questions.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.